Yes, it's your magical musical, all about Symbian Insight number 32, I think it is. Yes, it's me, Ewan Spence, coming to you from Edinburgh with the delights of the Scottish Chamber Orchestra not in the background. In the background, though, we have, as usual, a lovely heady mix of musical celebrities to take you through the wonderful world of power chords and everything that's been happening today. From the American good look department of the Everly Brothers, the Finnish rock lords Lordi, and the biting wit of Noel Coward, Stefan Konganescu.
Yo, kitos.
Hey, and Reading's greatest band, or at least Reading's greatest asset for B&Q, from Shed Music, Steve Litchfield.
Steve Litchfield, hello, from Reading, yes.
And especially from the Carnegie Hall's Folk America 2008 award ceremonies, it is lead singer from Harry and the Potters, Rafe Blanford.
And I'm tone deaf.
Yeah, as you can tell. Okay, well, maybe we shouldn't do a musical show. Maybe we should do a show about mobiles instead.
Oh, all right then.
Great idea.
Yeah, okay. It's the All About Symbian Mobile podcast. Trying to give you a bit of excitement in your life.
Yes, that's right. Exciting.
Come on, Ewan.
Okay, right, there we go. No, it has been an exciting week, as we all know. There have been huge changes in the mobile world. There's been lots of uproar and change and disruption, and that's all to do with the news. And as we have the news, who wants to go first? Rafe, let's talk about that big release. It's the beta software from Nokia. They're doing a lot of beta software. This time it's Nokia Chat.
Yes, this is Nokia's new present to us from Beta Labs. It's called Nokia Chat, and it's a presence and instant messaging software and service. It's in beta at the moment, so it's relatively limited in what it can do. But essentially what it's about is providing a presence solution that also integrates IM, but the important thing here is it has location features, and they're included in both the present status messages in a rather clever way, which we might comment on later, and also lets you send your location to people, and when they receive it, it's opened up in Nokia Maps. On the technical note, it's set up using XMPP or Jabber protocols for instant messaging, which means it's sort of open standard, if you like, can already federate with a number of services, including Google Talk, which should also work with things like Apple iChat, and potentially could go further in the future. So it's good to see Nokia release this kind of software, because I think it's going to be a very important platform for them in the future for the likes of presence, location, and chat, which, as we know, sort of encompasses three of the very hot topics in sort of mobile services.
So as our resident best-selling programmer, Steve, what do you make of this? I mean, it's obviously the good thing is it's being released and it's still in beta, but is there anything more we can derive from this?
I think this is going to be huge. The main fascinating thing here is that all the different bloggers that have covered this so far, apart from All About Symbian, they've just said, oh, blah, 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 Nokia's released a new chat program, and they've mentioned in passing that there's some location information. Rafe and I, as you'll see, if people will see if they look at our site feature, extensively tested the fact that it's GPS-enabled. Hey, GPS, from things like JQ in the past, obviously things like Twitter and various other chat systems, and things like BuddyPing even. From third party, they're all trying to achieve this holy grail of being able to communicate instantly with the people you know and love, and know exactly where they are and know who's close. So, as in the Phil Schwarzman demo video for Nokia Chat, you can find out that one of your friends is close and arrange a meetup. So there's a real tie-in there between the virtual world and the real world. And this is one of the first applications, I think, to really get it. And most importantly of all, in addition to this, the GPS and location side, there's the privacy issue has been sorted in a very unique way. Stefan, do you want to just mention how Nokia Chat gets around the privacy issue for GPS utilities?
Sure. It's actually kind of interesting where the GPS location that is broadcast isn't constantly updated, but instead you have to say, all right, this is a location I want to tag as a landmark, and only when you are in the vicinity of that landmark, that information will get transmitted to your friends, which is sort of useful, but if you're not in either work, home, or the cafe, then your friends have absolutely no idea where you are. So I'm not really sure how interesting that's going to be. I would like to see something more like sharing all of our destinations with friends. So if I'm ever at Heathrow Airport, hopefully either you, Rafe, or Ewan would have tagged that and it would show up in my chat program. But other than that, it is interesting.
I love the idea of if we're at Heathrow and it just tags up. Well, you know, I'm just going to send you instant chats going, welcome to the seventh circle of hell. I mean, it's an interesting one. And there's a couple of issues. Steve, you're kind of waving in the corner there.
Yeah, Stefan mentioned that it doesn't sort of update automatically. But in actual fact, as long as you've got enough places tagged in your Nokia Maps favourites, and let's face it, after a few weeks of using Nokia Maps, you've got your home, your work, your school, your train station, whatever. They're all as favourites that can be accessed. And there's also a setting where you can set the update frequency down to 1 minute, at which point it becomes seriously useful. Rafe and I did some testing yesterday, and Rafe could see when I left the house, he could kind of track me along a road. I sent him my location via the instant chat window, and he got me to within about 2 meters of where I actually was in that spot. He could see automatically, without me doing anything, when I arrived at my daughter's school. And again, he was able to see when I got back home, completely automatically, without me having to send anything. So there are possibilities out there. Stefan's suggestion just now is superb, that you can share destinations with your friends, and if somebody else sets up a destination, you happen to arrive there, then that gets flagged up. That's a great, great idea, and hopefully they'll implement that.
The one that's going to worry me is a fragmentation. The idea of tracking where you are at any point. Well, we've already got that in the beta labs already with Sports Tracker. Sports Tracker does that with a much more open standard, with a KML file that updates, which can be used by pretty much any navigation program. Here, you're using chat to do it, but you could be using KML, which is the geographic one. We're getting a lot of duplication of functions. We've also, Nokia Chat, great. We've got the chat room in it, the Engage client as well. Do we have stuff there? I mean, Sports Tracker is real time, Steve. It can do it because I put it in my flight simulator built for the BBC. It can update live. There's this lot. Again, it's that thing that we've always had, that sort of half an eye on Nokia. There's lots of little projects that all seem to be doing the same thing that are going on, or at least 90% of the same thing. And it's like, well, which one do I actually want to leverage into? I mean, can I get all my Engage friends into Nokia Chat? Is going to be one that I would think of initially.
I'm going to jump back in there, Ewan, because I've got a few things to say. I can see what you're saying about the fact there's lots of projects doing different things. And to a certain extent, I agree. But I think it's also an issue of how well people understand some of the positioning of these products. And we have to bear in mind that these are sort of beta labs or early releases. So, you know, they're not necessarily final products. The fact that we're able to get access to them early is something to be welcomed. And we can give feedback so Nokia can get this kind of thing. But I'd actually say that Nokia Chat and Sports Tracker are very different. I mean, Sports Tracker is very much about sharing particular routes. And yes, there's a live function to it. But a lot of the value is in being able to compare routes over time. You know, and when I say a route, I mean that's a track that you followed, whereas, you know, chat is far more about broadcasting your location and presence information. And I think it's pretty early days. We've talked about some things we'd kind of like to see in that, and I'm sure that will come in time. So I draw a distinction between Sports Tracker as kind of a recording thing, admittedly it does do it live, and chat, which is kind of a broadcast platform for location, if you like. When I was testing this out with Steve, as you said, it worked incredibly well. I mean, I do have a few issues about how quickly people will be able to set up enough landmarks, but I think Steve's right. In time, that will come. And I think at the basic level, you know, sharing that level of public information is what a lot of people will be comfortable with. And if they want to do more, they can send the location. But there are a couple of things, you know, I'd like to see, for example, the ability to be able to request the location of a friend. And, you know, you may have some privacy settings around that, whether it gets returned automatically or someone sees the request pop up. And I suspect there's going to be a lot more activity around, you know, exactly how these sort of things are implemented. But as a first step and for basics, you know, this works really well. And after all, most of the time people spend, you know, their time in relatively few locations, be at home or be at work. Or maybe your favourite pub or whatever. If you think about it, how many different locations do you go to? And if you are going to a new location, you know, quite often you will be putting in a landmark because you're looking to find it. The other thing I'd say is a lot of this, of course, does depend on integration, and Ewan touched on that with the Engage stuff. And I have to say, you know, this is a beta, so it does take time, but I would imagine we could expect to see this integrated in due course. And, you know, I think the first sign of that is the fact that you know, the username is actually using the Nokia account, which is going to be the new single sign-on system for Nokia. This is actually the same thing that's used by Files on Ovi and via the My Nokia backup system, and I suspect we'll see other Nokia services switch over to this in due course. But as I say, this kind of integration does take a lot of time. So, you know, I think you have to bear in mind it's early days, and to my mind at least, this shows a lot of promise.
Yeah, I mean, showing a lot of promise is good. We'll obviously keep an eye on it here, both on our websites, which Stefan's and ours, and the Insight podcast as well. But let's stay with Ovi, because Ovi released the Ovi Suites, which is another PC suite for your PC, not yet for Linux, not yet for Mac. It sits alongside Nokia Suite or PC Suite or the N Series PC Suite, and you know, I'm wondering just how many connection suites you can actually get on one laptop. But let's address that point laterally. Formally, let's actually have a look at what Ovi Suite actually does. Given this is an audio podcast, you can't actually see the lovely flash animations that we're all looking at here. But who thinks that function there is the most exciting? I'm tempted to say Rafe, just so I can go for a coffee.
Go on, Rafe.
Thanks, Ewan. Well, I think what's interesting about Ovi Suite is not so much the fact it's another PC suite, although, yes, of course, that's true. And it is worth pointing out that you can use Ovi Suites solely on its own. It does have most of the functions of PC Suite on it, but it's about the positioning in that it emphasizes sort of the Nokia Ovi services rather than kind of the traditional utilities and tools that come with PC Suite. So, you know, that's things like Nokia Photos, for example. The moment it currently uses Nokia Music Manager, but I have no doubt it will use Nokia Music for PC in due course. And so it's about promoting and integrating the Ovi services into a single suite on the desktop. And in that sense, it makes a lot of sense. In terms of new stuff, there isn't actually really an awful lot there, apart from one thing, which I think is what Ewan was talking about, which I'll come to in a minute. But I do think that sort of advertisement of the fact that you can do a lot more with the phone is important. And I'm thinking, as a novice user, this, you know, this gives you an experience which is much more like, oh, I can get my music onto it, I can get maps and stuff onto it, and especially when we get, you know, Maps on Ovi launch in terms of the web version as well, and all the location integration stuff that will happen there. At the moment, it only really works for the music and photos, but more will come in time. And so it's, you know, I think it's more of a placeholder at this point. The sort of one new feature is the sort of ability to fly through your media in 3D, which I have to say I found a little bit of a gimmick, and I wasn't really clear what sort of value it was adding there. And what it does is basically collects all the media that's come off your phone by a process of watch folders that you can set up on Ovi Suite, and then displays the photos and the videos in a 3D environment. You can then click on the photos to see them, and it's sort of navigating through a 3D landscape. And as you saw a video of this, I think it was at Nokia World, or actually no, it was Mobile World Congress in Barcelona this year, and it does look slick and it's all very pretty, but as a way of viewing photos, I can't say I'm completely convinced yet. So I haven't really played with it very much, but I think just doing it in Nokia Photos with a timeline is far easier for me at the moment, at least.
Right. The question that I have, and I've not yet updated it. Again, I was like, well, I'm just going to, you know, wait, let the bugs go through, let the problems, you know, find out, let Steve write an editorial about why it's not quite there yet. I'm a great big user of LifeBlog, and have been for, I mean, my LifeBlog goes back beyond the launch date, because I rolled in a lot of my old media. But I want to continue using the LifeBlog data that I have rather than switch over to another suite. And yes, the majority of people who will be using Ovi Suite on an N-Series device will be new phone owners. But when we start getting into the upgrade cycle and we start getting the software being upgraded, you know, it would be nice to have, you know, the consistent statement that this is Ovi Suite. It's going to be good for, you know, a good number of years. When you start putting in an archiving all your media, your materials, your pictures, your videos, you're going to be starting things like tagging these, adding in metadata. I've got a huge amount of that metadata sitting in LifeBlog. Now, if Nokia stopped the support for LifeBlog and say, well, Ovi does that now, then, you know, I'm in an interesting situation, because I'm, you know, I've my kids' entire lives are on there. You know, for me to want to move to another application and keep moving every 18 months or 2 years, or risk a new version and actually losing all that data, you know, we have to start thinking about the people who aren't tech enabled, who are going to be using this bit of software, you know, and if it's automatic update, you will be constantly changing it. Consistency is key here, and you know, we've got the OV suite, the N series PC suite, the regular PC suite. Hey, I mean, we've already talked between us about the problems of trying to put the Samsung S60 connectivity suite in, because you had to rip out all the S60 stuff. So, you know, we talked there earlier about positioning and where things are going to be. Then, you know, I'm still not seeing a clear vision. I'm seeing clear vision for Ovi, but not for Nokia and the mobile system from Finland as a whole.
I'll come back on that, Johan. And the first thing to point out is you have to understand that Nokia has a very wide product portfolio, and you don't necessarily supply the same software with each phone. And we already see that with the difference between N-series and S60 phones. And bear in mind that PC Suite is also operational and works for Series 40 phones and indeed other Nokia phones. So, you know, having differentiated products for different segments within Nokia's portfolio does make a certain sort of sense, but does make it confusing to people like us who may switch very frequently between the different types of phones, whereas most people will be on a 1 or 2 year cycle. So just that's one thing to bear in mind. To answer your question directly, Jeroen, you'll be very pleased to see that when you first open up OV Suite, one of the first things that you'll see is an import your life blog content, and that will actually import it both into the OV Suite, but actually what's happening in the background, it's being imported into Nokia Photos, and to all intents and
I don't want them going into Nokia Photos. I want them on my PC. I don't trust them.
Well, what I was going to say before you interrupted is that actually goes into various files and folders, which, as Stefan quite rightly said in the back channel, are the most tried and trusted method of doing these things. So all your data is quite safe, and actually Nokia Photos organises them in a far more logical file and folder fashion than Nokia Lifeblog ever did. And for those who are listening, basically Nokia Photos is to all intents and purposes the new version of Lifeblog. There are a few very small differences, but Nokia Photos actually has some extra features, and I think for most people it will be well worth the upgrade. The other thing I was going to say, which Stefan also predicted in the back channel, is that increasingly we're going to see sort of the integration with the online elements.
No, that's not what he said. He predicts that you were going to talk about online integration.
Well, yes, I am going to talk about
whether he agrees with it or not.
Sorry, Stefan, I defamed you there. Yes,
it happens.
Online integration basically will be coming, and you know, as much as you know, people store stuff on their PCs, and yes, I'm talking about further out than a couple of years for most people, but you know, thinking about it, I think a lot of this stuff will basically go out onto things like Share on Ovi, and getting that integration right is actually, I think, one of the biggest challenges. You know, the integration between your phone, the PC, and the cloud, and at the moment it is very conflicting, basically, and there needs to be clever ways of keeping track of which data has gone where, and you know, keep making sure the metadata and any information that's put in is maintained. So yes, I think it is the future, but that should answer at least some of your questions, Ewan.
Stefan, it's the first version on this one. Are you going to try it?
Absolutely not. when it comes to PC software, I don't think Nokia is doing that well of a job right now. In the future, version 2, probably version 3 will be the first time I try it. I'll comment on the OV Suite then, but for now, I use I use folders and I back up everything to Flickr, so I'm fine.
There we go. The doubters, the Thomases, and me in the background. Not that we actually have a Thomas on the podcast. Right, let's go away from ephemeral software computing, cloud computing, vagaries in the air, might be Creative Commons license or not, and get down to a bit of physical hardware. The 6220. Four numbers chosen at random, slapped on the front of a very nice phone. Steve has been taking a look at that. Steve, sum it up in three words.
Three words, I would say.
Yeah.
High spec with a hyphen. That's one word. High spec. Second word is plastic, and third word is hotcakes. also with a hyphen, as in will sell life.
Very, very attractive phone, which is available in the store. Right, on to our next subject. I'm getting a big slap from the back channel from Rafe, who's, yes. Rafe, my middle name is Thomas. He's always got a win, hasn't he? Mind you, he does. In charge. Anyway, okay, we'll stay with the 6220. Steve, let's go with that plastic one first. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's an inevitable thing. Trying to make a phone and sell it for just over £200 with this sort of specification, something has got to give. And there are little things like the fact it's got a mono tiny speaker. It's got a 2.5mm jack. Everything's a bit smaller. It's got a smaller display. There's no Wi-Fi. But apart from that, you know, the camera's top spec, GPS top spec. All the comms and the software side is top spec. It's got Xenon flash on the camera. So something's got to give. And the plastic build quality in the plastic, I think, is the main thing that's obvious. It feels a bit like a cheap Series 40 phone that you'd pick up on pay-as-you-go for 80 quid. Having said that, the moment you power it on, you realize, hey, what on earth have I got here? And you turn it over and you see the Carl Zeiss 5-megapixel lens with Xenon flash, and you think, wow, this is something a bit special. This will be the first real mass market phone to bring the sort of N series creativity to the high street. I reckon the 6120 did a pretty good job of bringing sort of cutting edge S60, but this takes the N95 levels of creativity in terms of photos, videos, photo sharing, geotagging, all that side of things. It brings it slap bang into the lap of the person in the high street on a very affordable tariff. And I've heard whispers today that this will be available on pay as you go, so there really is no excuse for people not to be in this sort of GPS online world. Rafe, you've also got 6220, just to show off that we've got two at the moment. This mine's on loan from One World very kindly, but Rafe, I believe you actually bought one.
Yes,
you want to take it next?
Yes, that's right. I bought it, and I actually think this is a really, really great little device. The thing for people who haven't seen it to really appreciate about it, this is actually a very small device. It's only, I think, 66 cc's in volume. That's only 5 cc's in volume bigger than the E51. So it's one of the smallest S60 phones. And, you know, that's a real cut down from something like the N95 or even the N82. So it really impressed me in that department. It's also incredibly light. And when you sort of take out the battery, you sort of you wonder where everything's gone, because it really is, you know, very small and very light. And just to underline what Steve was saying about the pricing, it really is quite amazing. You know, this is a phone that you can pick up now for about £260. And at the moment, it's got what I would refer to as kind of the launch premium pricing. So I'd expect that price to drop, you know, towards £200 or even lower within the sort of 3 or 4 months, maybe a little bit longer than that. And, you know, when you consider what you're getting, that really is amazing. When you compare it against sort of the launch price for something like the N95, you know, just over, I guess it'll be, 16 to 17 months ago, was £500. And even now, you know, if you're looking at the N95 8 gig, we're talking, you know, that again launched about £500. And even now it's about £400. The N95 is £350. The N96, of course, is going to be £600 or so. Now, when you look at the features, of course, you know, the N series are better. They've got nicer materials. I wouldn't necessarily say they're better designed, but you know, some of the software on board is marginally better. But it's really sort of things like the 8 gigabytes of memory that you get with the N95 or other bits and pieces. But for most people, the features that you're getting with the 6220 are going to be everything that they want. And, you know, getting a GPS and a 5-megapixel camera is really impressive in a device that's costing, you know, 50% of what most of the N series cost at launch.
Just one question there, Rafe. I mean, it's obviously not an N numbered device, but the software inside, does it have the N series stuff? Is it Engage compatible as a first one? What about things like Maps and the Music Store? Are they there? Is this more an N software build or an E software build, or is it, you know, that's sort of creating its own custom one?
Right, well, it's probably worth explaining that with S60, you basically get an S60 N series edition, which has a number of additional applications. And for example, in the case of the camera, there's a few extra settings. It's also things like Video Center and a few other Engage specific applications, but they're relatively few and far between these days. And what you've got with the 6220 is an S60 third edition feature pack 2, and that's taken on board many of what used to be N series only applications. For example, it's the same style camera in terms of the icons down the side rather than the bog standard S60 camera application that we used to see in standard third edition phones. But yes, it does have all the sort of service applications, so Nokia Maps, Nokia Music, Share on Ovi, and a number of others. So yes, it does have the full portfolio of Nokia Ovi services, and this could be considered, you know, the first entry-level, or sorry, not entry-level, mid-tier Ovi phone from Nokia. So yeah, you know, it's completely stacked in that department. Indeed, it comes with 3 months of free navigation in most markets, so that'll get you going on Nokia Maps, and it comes with a 1 gigabyte memory card onto which the maps are preloaded. So yes, I have to say I'm really impressed by this, just from the price point. And you know, we often talk about the high-end devices, and without a doubt that's what gets the most attention of tech leaders. But when we're talking about devices that are going to sell millions and millions, it's obviously a lot easier to sell cheaper devices. But it's also about getting this kind of technology into the hands of sort of the mass market, and to my mind that's really exciting. And I'd compare this to devices like the 6120 and the E65, which were relatively cheap compared to some of their you know, brother and sister S60 devices at the time, and they did incredibly well. And the 6220 goes so much further than they do, that it'll be that much more attractive. I think one of the, as a final point, the interesting thing when you talk to sort of operators, and you know, a lot of the sort of market research people, they say people are still buying phones a lot of the time based on how good the camera is. And obviously with a 5 megapixel camera, we're talking a really top of the line camera, and it's got a xenon flash, which makes a real difference. That means the camera is basically usable in all lighting conditions, and for the, you know, pretty much everyone who's going to buy this phone, this will replace their bog standard digital camera for them. You know, N-series users are typically going to be those who have a fairly high-end digital camera, or are trending that way. You know, people who buy the 6220 probably have a £100 digicam, and they're really just not going to need it after they've picked up a 6220. So, you know, this is sort of convergence for the mass market, and, you know...
One of the things that struck me about the 6220 was the return of the lens cover.
Yes, that's right, Ewan. It does have a lens cover on the camera. Personally, I'm not a big fan of those because I don't tend to get the lens too scratched up, but I know some people like it. It's interesting, on the 6220, the camera is quite recessed into the unit, so it is very, very well protected, and perhaps that's more suitable for a device like this, which people may treat less with kid gloves and is going to be bounced around a bit, and certainly has the hallmarks of Nokia's you know, usual build quality for this kind of device. You know, the plastic's very robust. I think this should do very well. But just to re-emphasize something about the camera, you know, operators and market research people often say the reason people are buying certain phones is still about the camera. This was particularly true of something like the N95. You know, people bought the N95 because of the headline 5 megapixel camera feature. And obviously, a device like this also has it, that much cheaper. I think that's what will really be attracting people. And now that, you know, Nokia are throwing in things like Share on Ovi and a decent camera application, you know, there's a lot of potential there for, you know, people to actually not only take the pictures but be able to then use them on the device, or get them printed off, or send them off to the web, or get them onto their PC.
It's a lovely phone. It's obviously the sort of phone that's got the amount of power that you'd like, but it's also, you know, robust enough and cheap enough that you'd be happy taking it out to a nightclub or in the town if you decided to do 20-odd pints of beer in one night and party the night away in Amsterdam. Stefan, would you agree?
Well, when you're in Amsterdam, you're doing a lot more than taking photos of your friends, but...
yeah, my mom listens to this, okay?
I will disagree with Rafe here by calling it a mid-range phone. It's supposed to retail for about 350 euros, which I consider a high-end price, but versus the N95 and the N82, I think it just shows that after 1 year that we've had the N95, actually just over 1 year, the price has fallen drastically, and it's allowing those people... Oh my God, I just called people who can't afford an N95 those people. Okay, it's allowing the common man to...
Sorry, should we just call Donald Sutherland in to do that ghost clinic from the end of Invasion of the Body Snatchers for you here, Stefan?
Okay, so this isn't going as well as I was expecting. It allows ordinary people to purchase a phone that... is much too powerful for them, but it will allow them to explore those features and see that, hey, look, a cell phone can do so much more. And it really isn't going to make a big impact until you can get a sort of 6220-like device for under 200 euros, which probably will happen within a year or two. And then that's when the full-on smartphone revolution will take forth. But everything else that Rafe said about allowing everyone else to have the phone and the GPS and the 5-megapixel camera, I agree completely. I've been playing with one since February. Proto, of course, it wasn't final hardware, but still, it's just a great small phone.
Well, there we go there. Okay, let's touch a bit back on software, mainstream software. But also, you know, we have certain traditions and cliches that have built up an All About Symbian in the podcast. I think this week I reviewed the Motorola Z10, which I know you guys talked about last week, but you can play spot the 5 album titles of Hawkwind that I've slipped subtly into the text. And I thought I was being quite subtle. Steve, you managed to review a golf game and plug your own bit of software that you released 12 years ago with a screenshot. Congratulations.
I always try and slip in subliminal plugs for my own stuff. It's part of one of the perks of the job. No. Pro Series Golf was released on Engage last week, and it's pretty terrific in a specific way. If you just look at the basic game, the 3D visuals are pretty nice, but there are a lot of elements missing in terms of sound effects, crowd, and all the things you perhaps would expect from a golf game in 2008, even running on a phone. But the thing that takes it from being a pretty competent golf game, something special, is the fact this is the first game that really takes advantage of the N-Gage Arena. And within 10 minutes of installing it, I was playing a game in real time against Rafe, and it was an awful lot of fun. We were able to actually chat in a Skype back channel on our PCs while playing the game, but to be able to play someone in real time with no delays, really. There were, at the very most, you had about a second delay between holes, and there was only a fraction of a second delay between the other person physically taking the stroke on the other side of the world and you seeing them see that stroke animated on your own screen. So the Stefan's saying geeks in the back channel. Yeah, I know, but it's great fun. But Pro Series Golf really uses the N-Gage, the multiplayer aspect to its full. And for that reason alone, I would say it's highly, highly recommended that you at least give it a one or 3 day trial.
Well, I know that golfing games may not be Ewan and Stefan's cup of tea, but I'm just going to jump in here and say I agree with Steve. You know, seeing this kind of multiplayer experience happening over the phone shouldn't be ignored. It really does work really well. Although the golf games are kind of a love for them or hate them thing, just seeing the technology work like that really, really impressed me. And I'm the first to admit I quite like playing a game of golf. I wouldn't go out and play it on a golf course, but I'll happily play it on my phone when I'm, waiting on for a bus or something like that. And, this online multiplayer stuff really does take it to another level, as people have already discovered, on the PC and on the console world. So, big thumbs up from me too.
So there we are, N-Gage Pro Golf. It's certainly an improvement on Tiger Woods Golf that came out on the original N-Gage, especially in multiplayer. But you can't help look at software this week and not have a little look over at Apple's iPhone, iPod, iTunes, iTouch Store. Working on the back of the iTunes Music Store system, this is allowing software downloads over the air into specifically the iPhone and the iPod Touch. And isn't this something that, Symbian should have had years ago? I mean, we've got it somewhere in the download store, but I really don't want to compare the download store to the app store. Because really, Apple have actually managed a good user experience here, haven't they?
Who are you asking?
Anyone? Anyone? Oh. Bueller?
Well,
Bueller?
I'm going to take this and run with it, but I think that the App Store is probably it was that one thing that everybody will copy, and it will be it will change everything. Honestly, I'm just going to say that it will change everything in the smartphone space. We will see an Android application store. We will see a Windows Mobile application store. We're probably going to see the same thing thanks to the Symbian Foundation. So that if you want an actual Symbian Foundation logo certification, you probably will have to apply for some stringent quality controls to make sure that your code is compatible with the source code, and then you can get access to the application store. But that entire concept of just the central repository that a user could search through, scroll through, see what other people thought about, I've said it once, I think it was on the Insight as well, a couple previous episodes, but App Store is absolutely genius, and I would like to see everyone else copy it with pride.
I just really wish that the Palm Sources plans to get the Palm App Store that started off back in 2001 had actually got off the ground. As it is, Apple have come to an idea that really should have been in place 6 or 7 years ago on some systems.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I'm going to come back here and actually just take a contrary note. I mean, I do actually agree with you too that it's an important development, but I think the universal praise it's getting is misplaced. For starters, if we look at the way Apple have done this, this is the only way to distribute applications for the iPhone, unless you ignore sort of unlocking the device, which you know is questionable in terms of it being done by the mass market. You know, jailbreaking the phone, as it's referred to, you know, that isn't, I don't think that can really be factored in here. You know, so Apple, for example, basically aren't allowing you to distribute applications publicly without using the App Store, which isn't, to my mind, is a completely arrogant step and is a level of control that's, you know, unheard of on any other platform. You know, you can get, you know, some certification does set some rules on something like Symbian or Windows Mobile, but essentially you're free to develop and make available whatever you like. That just isn't true for the iPhone. Now, I'm sure people come back to me and say there's exceptions for enterprises and for limited releases in sort of academic environments or whatever, and that's true, but basically for the mass market it's not. So that's arrogant to start with. Honestly, having everything into a single app store doesn't necessarily guarantee the best user experience. What I do think is good about this, you know, is providing a number of applications in this way, so you can introduce people to the concept and maybe then say, if you want to find out more, you can look elsewhere. You know, the more content you put into it, the harder the App Store will be to use, even with good search and discovery tools. So I don't actually think this is necessarily the breakthrough that people see it. You know, one of the big things is actually getting it onto the device itself. But in that sense, it's not really all that different to something like the Handango catalog. Of course, a lot of it is in the sort of the ease of use, and, you know, the way it's all sort of integrated together. But, you know, I wouldn't actually hold this up as revolutionary as everybody thinks it is. You know, and while I do think it will be copied by others, I don't think it will necessarily be in the same way. And now that it's actually out, I've had a chance to have a look through the applications that are all available within the App Store. And you know what? There's about 20 applications which I'd rate as decent. And the rest of them are either, you know, very niche, it's not necessarily a bad thing in itself, of course, or they're complete junk. You know, when people are putting up ebooks as applications at, you know, 99 cents a time, or reference works in the same mold, you know, there's actually very few good applications in the App Store. And, you know, and when you have that kind of mix of cruft, I would call it, with some of the quality stuff will just be drowned out. You know, people, you know, are lazy, they won't necessarily go looking for the good stuff, and while a certain amount can be done by a recommendation, etc., you know, it surprises me. You know, Apple have got the capability to be very strong gatekeepers, and they're keeping out some really good stuff, you know, like the navigation stuff and some of the terminal services stuff, which they're not allowing in. So, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, I think given how much Apple put into getting things right as much as they can first time, it's a misfire for me. I mean, I'm being deliberately controversial here, because I know most of the things is going to be about how brilliant it is, and yes, it's got a lot that everybody could learn from, but equally well, there are plenty of things that aren't right with it.
I think a lot of it comes down to how much do you actually trust Apple. If we go for the complete extremes, if Apple are evil and just appear to be nice, rather like Vincent Price in the horrible Dr. Phoebe, then they've got rid of any competition from their App Store. They're controlling the last mile. They're getting a cut of every single software sale ever on their platform, which I'm sure is something that Nokia or Symbian or Cyan or everybody would have liked. Well, they've set it at 30%. That's lower than everybody else. But what happens if they go, well, you know, there's a bit of recession on. It costs more for bandwidth. We're going to need to jack this up to 40%, to 50%. If Apple were truly evil, then they won't have any problems doing that. There's also the question of what do you do, and a typical example is, what happens when you have 25 clock applications? Superclock, WonderClock, SuperClock, TimeFly, everything. Apple will probably have to recommend one or two of them. If you search clock, one of them will have to be at the top of the list. How does it decide which one? I mean, is it being subjective on quality? Is it the one that pays the most tribute to Jobs? It's incredibly difficult. But on the other hand, if you decide that Apple is whiter than white, is gorgeous, is the best thing since sliced bread, is the first company to even think of this idea, then you love the fact that they're making it simple. It's one stop. People can search. There'll be a recommendation engine. You know, people who are coming in as new authors will have a much bigger... will have no disadvantage compared to someone who's got 25 applications and earning Apple Constant Royalty. Apple will treat them well. It'll be a level playing field. It won't be a long tail. No, sir, whatsoever. The truth, as with all these things, will lie somewhere in the middle. The question is, do you tend to the white view or the black view? And to be honest, I tend towards the evil view here. I think that Apple are going to treat this like the music business treats Walmart.
Steve Jobs Steve Jobs has totally been reading the Evil Overlord Handbook. No question.
Yes. Whenever a small man turns up in blue police box, run away. Stefan, you'll be thinking that the App Store is the best thing since sliced bread, or that we need to give it a month or two?
I think it's the best thing since sliced bread, not because of what it is in its current state, but because it got everyone to say, we should copy that. And I'm all for people copying from each other and just applying that small hint of differentiation, which helps fuel the market further. So while I totally hate the iPhone, will probably never purchase an iPhone and dislike everything Apple stands for, I still think that they're going to change everything, and that App Store, that's partially why I love it. So
yeah, and you have to have a lot of admiration for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a certain capitalistic, oh, well done you, you've managed to corner a market that never existed and you completely own it. For the win!
You can be evil and admire their methods without actually wanting them to win. But no, I mean, yeah. I joke aside, no, I agree with Stefan, you know, what the iPhone's done, it's not just in the App Store, it's got people talking, got people thinking about these issues, and ultimately I suspect, you know, it will be their competitors that benefit most from it in the long run, because I think Apple will have a hard time sustaining it, just because of the way the mobile market works. You know, they are going to be able to produce great products at sort of a relatively high-end boutique. Whether they'll be able to take that out to the mass market, I sincerely doubt. But of course, everyone else will be following up on what they've done. So the likes of, you know, Sony Ericsson, HTC, Nokia, RIM will be taking a lot of the lessons on board. And, you know, it gets consumers aware of these kind of things, the fact they're more than just phones. You can install apps, you can use services. And that's only going to be good for the mobile ecosystem as a whole.
It's going to be good for the people at the top of the mobile ecosystem. The little developer is going to have to put even more effort into his marketing on the web. But whereas before he had to leverage as many people as possible back to their website, they now have to leverage as many people as possible to Apple's website. Evil Overlord Handbook, page 27. Stefan.
The one small thing for me is that Apple has totally changed what Americans think a cell phone should be for.
Spot the keyword in that sentence, everybody.
What? Americans. Yeah, and I think that when you take a country that has so many software developers, competent ones, I mean, we're talking about Silicon Valley and Redmond, Washington, there are plenty of capable people out there who are now saying, there's something I could work on, an application for my cell phone, and that changes everything. And with that, I'll wrap it up.
And just to add to that, they're smart people. They can look at market share figures. They'll develop first for the iPhone, but they'll then be going, how can I sell more applications? You know, absolutely agree with what Stefan says. You know, you talk to any of the big operators, big platform providers, they say that the majority of mobile developers are still US-based, and often a lot of the innovation comes out of there. So, yeah, great stuff.
And we'll be hearing very shortly lots of people talking about a lovely check from the Apple Store. But do remember that Apple will only send you your payment once you reach earnings of $250. So that's 70%. Your $250 cut, which means you're going to need to sell 30 to 35 versions of your application at $10 a pop before you even see any money. That's going to keep Apple a lot of five, 10 single registration. AdSense, $100. I think Handango's $50. It's all about, you know, and that's a lot of interest that Apple are going to be earning on that pot of money till the end of the financial month. Anyway, what that's going to do to the download application, well, it can only make it better, which, to be honest, wouldn't be that difficult. But we're rapidly running out of time, MP3 space and bandwidth here, so I think we shall call that the end of the insight. My thanks to Stefan. It allows ordinary people to buy a phone. Contentinescu.
Thank you. Thank you.
Steve, I always try to slip in a subliminal. Litchfield.
Yeah, goodbye, everyone.
Rafe, never have a chat with him. He'll write Wuthering Heights, Blandford.
Cheers, Ewan.
And Ewan, with his silver machine, Spence, signing off here. It's All About Insight podcast. No music to end with. We're just going to stop and go...
Ewan, also known as the Energizer Bunny.